Okay, so this is Pat Williams for our monthly forum call, the Institute for Life Coach Training. Delighted today to have my guest and longtime friend and very early student at ILCT, I think in the second class we ever taught in 1999, Marilyn O'Hearn. Yeah, and Marilyn's gone on to fame and no fortune by being not only a faculty at ILCT, but Marilyn's been on the board of directors of the International Coach Federation now for how many years?
Well, I was on for 6 years, went off December a year ago, and then promptly joined the Association of Coach Training Organizations board. So, and Pat, you've been on both of those boards as well.
That's right. Yeah, so Marilyn and I are what we call veterans in the business. We don't get old coaches. We're just veteran coaches. And
I like to call us elders.
Elders, yeah. I'm actually on the committee for on the Association of Coach Training Organizations. I'm one of the wise elders. So
there you go.
We have such a group. So both of those efforts, I want to say to the people listening here live and listening to the recording, a major emphasis that Marilyn has had percolating in her for years, ever since I first met her and found out she lived abroad, lived in South America, had a lot of interest in that sort of thing. She has really nudged, pushed, cajoled, influenced everything possible to get the International Coach Federation and coaching schools to be more cognizant of cultural competency. And a couple of years ago, I can't remember what conference we were at. It might have been London, or it might have been before that, but Magda Mook, who's the current CEO of ICF, and Marilyn and a bunch of us sat down and started talking about what would it be like if we had a special emphasis in this. And so that created this ICF Advance that just occurred in October that Marilyn and I and about 180 people went to from around the world. And I was delighted to be there, delighted to see what Marilyn's inspiration and others had created. It was a super valuable conference for me, not only as a coach and trainer, but also because of my nonprofit, Coaching the Global Village. I learned so much more about what we're doing right and what we can do more of. So what I want to do is have Marilyn see if there's anything else she wants to say about this event, and then we're going to just dialogue about what we learned and what's up in the world of coaching with cultural competency. We've got a few questions that students have sent in, Marilyn, talk later. And we seem to have a clear line, so those on the call may be able to ask a question later, too. If the line does get noisy, I will mute you all out. And then you can do *6, actually. If you know you're in a noisy environment, push *6. And then if you want to say something, you can push *6 again, and you'll be able to come back into the call. So Marilyn,
just a couple more comments about thank you for that background, Pat.
Yeah.
And I served on the advisory team for the event, which was, you know, really fun with an international group. Just a couple of comments. One is the conversation continues. So I was on a coach chat radio out of New York last week, and that's recorded if anybody wants to listen to that. In addition to this, the webinars, there were pre-event webinars that ICF hosted, two of them, and those are still on the ICF website, free for anyone. You do not have to be an ICF member, so I highly recommend that you listen to those, download the material. And then, again, the conversation continues. So within the profession, there's a group of people that have formed a research group, and they're gathering together research that's already been done and looking at what other research people want to sponsor in this field, cultural competency and coaching. And then there are pilot projects planned around the world on this topic. And then within ACTO, there's a task force. It continues to be part of a conversation there, as well as continuing what was like a roundtable discussion at the event on cultural competency in coach training and education. And so those were members of ACTO schools like ILCT is, as well as a representative from the Graduate School Alliance.
Right.
Terry Maltby at Columbia University. So
yeah,
we're
exactly.
continuing the conversations.
Well, not only that, but and you may not know that I'm part of these, although you probably, I'm part of the ACTO committee with Johnny.
Yes.
About helping, you know, for the event in April next year in Orlando.
Yes.
and perhaps officially. But I'm also taking this outstanding class from, Virginia Kellogg and her group with Leadership That Works on white privilege.
Yeah, I'm in that discussion group.
Oh, that's right. You're part of that. So
yeah.
there's a lot bubbling up about this. And I think a good place to start for the people on the call today is, so what prompted this conference, and what do we mean by cultural competency?
Mm-hmm. So cultural competency is the awareness and skills needed to work effectively across cultures, and that is includes communication, how you set up, you know, the contracting. I teach a class at ILCT on direct communication. It's one of those 11 ICF core competencies that has a great variation culturally. So some
mm-hmm.
cultures value direct communication, and in others, the communication standard is more indirect, and if you're very direct, you could be considered rude and lose your coaching contract.
Right.
So important things to know about. And also, Pat mentioned this white privilege group. So we're talking about both international, regional differences, as well as diversity cultural competencies.
Mm-hmm.
So there really were two different threads throughout the event, and the webinars were in those two threads also.
Yeah, and I think an important point that I've learned, I mean, I always kind of felt this, but it's been more clarified for me in these trainings, is for those of you listening, is that when we talk about cultural competency, we're not just talking about race. It's way more than race. It can be age groups in a workplace. It can be sex diversity. It can be regionalism. I mean, one of the people at the conference asked, well, you know, I came to North Carolina, so I understand Americans. And I'm thinking, yeah, so North Carolina versus Colorado, that'd be a little different. Texas versus Maine, that's a little different. So even in corporations where people work internationally, or if you work with an international company or coach somebody from there, there's so much diversity in the workplace today that what we want to leave you with a taste for today is, how do you not step over yourself and understand what Virginia Kellogg teaches and we call oops and ouches. I mean, we may mm-hmm. sometimes make a mistake. We may be messy in our attempt to be culturally competent, and that's part of the process. It's really a coaching competency of being curious and being authentic and willing to be wrong. Willing to learn.
Yes, thank you for that. And so just even from the two different pre-event webinars, here's Belma Gonzalez and Johnny Manzon-Santos' definition for culturally aware coaching, and then I'll read Philippe Brozinski, who's from Belgium. So Johnny and Belma's is utilizing cultural awareness to support a client or community and valuing all of who they are, to be in alignment with all they bring, as well as to create stronger, more authentic coaching relationships. And then Philippe Brozinski and Dina's was coaching across cultures, a more creative, powerful, and complete form of coaching. It also helps to unleash the potential that resides in cultural diversity. And their definitions for culture even are slightly different.
Right.
I'm attempting to bring these both together in a talk I'm delivering in January, the two different threads. Yes.
Good. Yeah, I think that's important. Yeah, I've already given a talk since I got back. Well, I did one in Pittsburgh, and then I did one here locally and kind of brought this up. Part of the discussion at this advance that I was thrilled with is the beginning, and actually started before the workshops, is if the ICF is going to embrace globally a competency, that we're actually calling it cultural competency, is that a new competency, number 12, or can it be woven into the 11 that we have? And so that was actually part of the discussion, both formally at the conference and informally in the hallway discussions that people had. What are your thoughts on that?
You're asking me or the whole group?
Yeah, Marilyn, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have promised to develop a class on this myself, and I'm looking partly to the research to, to build that foundation on. But my inclination is that it's going to be brought out in each of the 11 core competencies. So just as I had mentioned, that the direct communication.
Yep.
That it will be calling our awareness to the cultural differences there.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I know that you saw some of the summary notes I took from the conference and some things I gave to the ACTO committee. And I will say for those on this call, if you're interested in that, they're just rough notes, but it might give you some insights into what was said by the various speakers at the conference. And for me, what it boils down to is this, that if you are being masterful in your coaching, it doesn't mean you're a master certified coach, but if you're being masterful in your coaching, if you're being of the highest skillfulness, part of the skills of coaching, of being curious and self-aware and self-managing and focusing on creating a presence both with the client, I mean, having them be present, you be present, those skills actually help you become culturally competent because you will begin to ask questions like I've now done with my clients that I never asked before. I said, is there anything about your culture, about your upbringing, or about anything that would be part of what you consider your culture that it would be important for me to know? And I have had such thrilling conversations that I never would have had if I hadn't asked that question.
Yes. I agree. This is Marilyn. I've added it to my welcome pack as part of the introductory questions. And I work internationally like Pat does. So two of my clients right now, one is a United Nations agency where I coach leaders around the world, United Nations leaders, and another is working with a Tokyo-based company and their leaders in Tokyo and Shanghai. And I find that and a third contract is with the Kansas Leadership Center, which Pat's also done some work with, and it's civic and community leaders across the state. So I find that in Kansas or in the U.S., when I ask, tell me about the meaning of your name or a little bit about your culture, then if they're white, they may say, I don't know what you mean. You know, what do you mean, my culture? And so then I use myself as an example.
Uh-huh.
And I introduce myself along the line of all my different cultural identities. And then they have a clue on what I'm talking about and will introduce themselves the same way.
Yeah, I think that's part of an interesting story in getting to know people. If you just ask it with that curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I've heard people, I've had people listen to me talk and try to peg where I'm from, and I realized, okay, I grew up in Kansas, I grew up in rural Kansas, and then I went to, Kansas City area, which is more suburban, and then I went to Colorado, and then I went to graduate school in the south of Georgia, and then I lived in Quebec City for a summer with a French family. And now I'm down in Florida. So it's like my accent has been all sorts of different things, even though it's not brutally visible or audible. There's things I say that people can pick up and get confused about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of fun. So that's part of my story. You know, it's part of who I am and who I have in my roots, or what I have in my roots.
Yes. Yes. So Pat mentioned it's about sexual orientation. It's about age group. It's about gender, as well as ethnic, racial, regional, national. The working definition for culture from Johnny and Belma is: culture is the ideas, feelings, values, beliefs, attitude, and knowledge that characterize and inform society as a whole, as well as smaller groups and individuals. Culture shapes our identity, provides the framework for our values, and informs the lens of how we see, feel, and experience the world and our relationships. And I would add, definitely our communication as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was one speaker at the conference, very interesting guy named Paolo Nigari.
Mm-hmm.
And he was from, help me out.
Italy.
He was from originally Italy, spoke three languages, spoke and trained in three languages, maybe four, in fact. Now lives in North Carolina. And I wrote down what he came up with. He called it his ROI. So
mm-hmm.
instead of return on investment, the R was realize that perspectives are numerous. Yours is not the only one.
Mm-hmm.
So as a coach, we should hold that, you know, viable all the time for us. And then the O is overcome differences by focusing on similarities among cultures. Yes, we need to be aware of the differences, but there's a lot that's similar, too, and that's kind of our jumping-off point for people to people. This is the common ground on which relationships are built. It may be a common passion or joy, and then learn about the differences that may get in the way of working with them, or maybe in them working with another culture, like somebody has been transferred to a plant in Hong Kong, or they've got people from Asia that have been transferred here. How is that different? So that's the O. And then the I was interact. Avoid seeing differences as obstacles and start instead to view them as opportunities. Synergize differences to find new ways to deliver results. So honor the differences, leverage the similarities. I love what he had to say about that.
Yeah, and Philippe Rosinski, who has written a book on the topic I mentioned, did one of the pre-webinars, talks about leveraging the differences. So
mm-hmm.
just as we sometimes, as an executive or leadership coaches, are really valued for coming in as external coaches with a new, fresh, different perspective, then it's actually been proven by research the organizations that have more diversity, more women, more people of color, different age groups, et cetera, those fresh perspectives that they provide actually enhance the company's bottom line. They do better on the stock market, those organizations, and in terms of their profit.
Well, this is Patricia Marilyn.
Yes.
I work in healthcare, and I'm in Flushing, New York, and in this particular area, it's very diverse. They speak 129 languages in Flushing.
Wow.
So to say we are in a diverse area is the understatement of the year, and it can be conflictual. We have numerous diverse groups in the hospital in terms of employees, in terms
mm-hmm.
of patients. There are misunderstandings in communication. So we do trainings here all the time in cultural diversity and cultural competency.
Well,
very
great.
Good.
Well, you
super.
Probably have a lot to add to this also. Pat mentioned some of the things that we naturally bring as coaches, our curiosity, our openness, and several other qualities that are important for this work, cultural work, is a tolerance for ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
So things are not
yep.
always going to be clear.
That's right.
And as Patricia's mentioned, they can be messy. and that, you know, we are also asked or challenged to be humble, so to realize we don't know everything, to be vulnerable, and kind of learn as we go.
Yeah, and I have to say, Marilyn, as I hear you say that, I started smiling so big because that is why I love coaching.
Yes.
All those things are really why I love moving, in my case, from being a psychologist to a coach, because I love all those qualities. It makes the job easier if you embrace them. You don't have to be the expert. You don't have to be the know-it-all. That people actually love learning about what they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes us, the coach, as well as our clients.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
Whatever work you all do in coaching, even if you just find people in your local area, they bring with them a culture as you do. And so some of this competency is being willing to ask questions about it in an inquisitive way, not in an interrogative way, because it's part of the learning who is. It's really part of the learning of the being of your client. So let's see if anybody on the call, we've got a nice quiet line. Does anybody on the call have a question or a comment about what's been said so far? Or a specific question for either Marilyn or myself? If you muted yourself, remember to do *6 before you talk, and we'll be glad to take any questions from the audience here. Okay, well, I'll read a question.
Ahead. And actually, before you do that, on that last white privilege call, Pat, I don't think you were there.
No,
we were talking about coaching and how definitely powerful questions is an important part of coaching, and yet there's a variance on that too. So someone shared that in the Hawaiian culture, to ask a lot of questions is considered rude, and really how people learn and communicate is more by observing, listening and observing.
You know, that reminds me even of a difference. You and I, however many years ago, we taught our group of South Koreans that took our training.
Yes.
And Meryl and I learned a lot because there was one cultural uniqueness that with the mostly women were on the call with, I think, one man only, if I remember, maybe two.
A few,
And we learned that here we were trying to teach them our coaching methodology of asking questions and you know, having people respond, and they're silent. And we learned that in their culture, here Meryl and I were the professors, right? They saw us as the professors, and they're taught not to question the professor.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't really share their opinion much. We were asking for their opinion, like, given what we just talked about, what do you all think? And they were... and, you know, a little, I won't say embarrassed, just unpracticed in giving their opinion, which changed later on. But that's one of the differences in that culture, especially in the business environment.
Yes, sure. And I found that when I taught for Ottawa University in Hong Kong and Malaysia, too, that what's a useful idea is to talk about let's talk about your culture, about my culture, and then
right. Let's
define together what's the culture that we want to create
right. Now
for our working together.
Right.
Because if you just ask someone from Japan or China or Korea, you know, is this okay, then they have to say yes, because if they
right. Say
no, that's being rude. So.
Right.
You can't go that way. You've
yep.
got to talk it through together
mm-hmm.
using the what and the how. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had two interesting experiences, and well, more than two, but these two come to mind. When we taught our curriculum in Istanbul the first time, which now Lynn Mikey goes over twice a year and continues our training at ILCT with Turkey, we had, Lynn and I had... at the same time interpretation. So while we talked, the listeners that didn't understand English had earphones on with an interpreter telling from a soundproof booth what we were saying. And you can tell by my presentation that I use a lot of lightness or humor at times. And every once in a while, I had to wait 3 or 4 seconds to see if they got it. And to see if it landed okay. And then in Beijing, when I did a training, it was harder because we had to do like part of a sentence, and then the interpreter would stop us and say what we said to the audience. And then if somebody had a comment or a clarification, she would have to say back to us what they said. So for a 6-day training in which I had like 360 slides, which was part of the curriculum, we got through 180.
Wow.
And they loved the training, but we really had to adjust because that slowed everything down. And yet it also made the learning much more collaborative. And it was fabulous.
Yeah.
So somebody on the call, how many of you have clients that you would consider connected internationally or cross-culturally? What experiences or questions do you have from that perspective?
I work with a lot of the physicians and the residents as well, and many of them are from different countries, and they don't seem to understand why the Americans are so, as they put it, sensitive. Why can't you just speak with them directly like we do in our culture? Everything has to be softened every day. So it's a definite communication issue, and they really have a difficult time. A resident was having tremendous difficulty with a patient, and he said, I was just stating the case. I was just telling them it's a terminal illness.
Yeah.
They don't understand why the Americans just can't say it outright, as they put it.
Mm. And was that Patricia again?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that ties into rank and authority. So in different cultures, rank and authority are seen differently. Like Pat mentioned in Korea or in Asia, that the professor or the teacher is very revered.
Absolutely.
And not to be challenged or questioned. So the person in authority, including the doctor, would have that, you know, they wouldn't be used to people talking back to them.
Right.
Or showing emotion. That in our culture there now, I mean, that used to be true probably, you know, 50 years ago, but it has
mm-hmm.
changed
mm-hmm.
in the U.S.
Right.
We have an interesting couple of questions that somebody sent in. There's one that says, how to recognize when, as coaching happens, you and your client may be experiencing a cultural gap, as opposed to some other things that can cause disconnect in coaching. So the question is, how to recognize that? How to recognize when you may be experiencing a cultural gap? How would you respond to that, Marilyn?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
because
sometimes
somebody may not want to say anything to you, but
right.
there might be just this uncomfortable pause.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that could be a clue to stop and check in on what's happening. And again, I think a way to things like that are going to pop up no matter what we do. But the more you can do on the front end when you're contracting to
mm-hmm.
create your own culture,
right?
The coach-client partnership, the better.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about this question, when they say, as opposed to some other things that can cause disconnect. So in coaching, as a trained coach, you always want to be aware of that feeling in your gut or that intuition that says, something's off track here. Let me just check in. I mean,
mm-hmm.
when in doubt, my famous words are, ask the client. You know, I'm getting a sense that it may be just me, you know, but we seem to have a little disconnect here, or there's something that's just a little bit off track. You know, maybe it's just me, but what are you experiencing? Because that word experiencing is so neutral.
Yeah.
Not what are you feeling, what are you thinking, what are you seeing, but what are you experiencing? And then if you're aware that it's a cultural gap, if you're figuring out that may be there, name it, call it, and bring the question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is there something about the culture that you bring to this coaching that I'm missing or need to learn about? Or, you know, my intuition says there's something I'm stepping on or stepping in or stepping over.
Yeah.
So, again, it's back to Patricia's comments. Like, can we be direct and just don't avoid it? It's like the elephant in the room. You know, don't avoid
right.
it. Bring it up.
Right, and listening to your intuition is a good point, and I teach that too, to ask not how are you feeling, but what are you experiencing,
right.
because then people can respond from their thoughts, their feelings, their intuition, the something in their body, spiritually,
right.
you know, any level.
Right.
And one of the things that I loved that speaks to this cultural difference, if the event itself was when we had the panel with different people representing different coach training programs in different cultures, Kyoko Seki from Japan said, "Now you'll notice that there'll be times that I'm silent and watch out."
Yeah.
Because that doesn't mean I'm not active. I am.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You know, I will say something, but, you know, there's silence. We talk about that in coaching. That's part of the competencies, is allowing silence, especially after you've asked a question.
Mm-hmm.
But to certain cultures, there will be more comfortable, or there's more permission for more silence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was valuable to hear her say that. It's like, and she said, "I'm not an introvert. I mean, in parties or gatherings, I'm not an introvert. But in this, I'm an observer, and then I'll talk. So I'm very active." Yeah.
Yeah, that was a cultural education piece from her.
Yeah, very true.
And then, Pat, I know you teach a class on metaphors, and that's one of my classes in the direct communication class, because it's part of that competency on metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
And metaphors, use of metaphors and stories are universal. So that's a great connecting.
This is Patricia. I recently took that class with Pat, and it's invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Patricia. I know the funny part, I just have to tell you this, Patricia. I went in for my annual physical.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be danged if my doctor didn't use a metaphor. And I just had to laugh. And he said, "What?" Now, he's from Africa. He's originally from Nigeria. And he just said, "What?" And his big teeth smiled. I said, "I just got to share with you. When you said, you know, when you feel like that, what's that like?" And I went, "I can't believe you said that." Oh, it was funny. So I said, "That should be part of your medical diagnosis now. That should be a question you ask." So there's another interesting question. I don't want to deny people's questions, but I'm going to give this a context. This is a very American thing, I think. But someone wrote in, how can we create space for dialogue given the closed attitudes of some? So in this culture, this person says, like the Tea Party, other ways forward for our nation. You know, and if it was a Tea Party or writing that in, they'd have a question of how can we deal with the damn liberals? So it's about dialogue. And unfortunately, I don't think our political system is yet coachable.
Well, and, you know, that's a great point about culture. You know, we talk about different corporate cultures, and really, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats and the conservatives and the liberals are two different cultures in the U.S. right now that could use some cultural competency.
Oh, that'd be a great thing for the ICF to push. in a stealth sort of way. We're going to have to get, like Kansas. Kansas coaches new legislators. You know, they give coaches to new legislators. That's where we get our foot in the door. That, you know, the founding fathers certainly had cultural competency with some blind spots, right, to maybe slave.
Yes.
But that'd be my hope. Let's get this conversation going more widely.
Yeah, I certainly agree that they need dialogue, and I think there is a level of respect missing as well.
Yeah, respect, awareness of your own culture, you know, and aware of how other people see your culture is important.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Patricia, I just think you said the key word is dialogue, because I am kind of a political junkie, although I'm withdrawing a little bit these days. I love it because I'm fascinated by it, and occasionally I'll even watch the station that I don't want to watch. But the bottom line is, it's a bunch of monologues. Dialogues seem to be gone.
Right.
And that's a key point in cultural competency, is that we aren't lecturers to our clients. We're not teachers to our clients. We may occasionally teach something. But in coaching, it is a interdevelopmental dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a dialogue focused on the client, not on you.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell I'm excited about this stuff. I think this is
We both are. passionate about it.
Yeah, this is the freshest piece, new thing in coaching. That I've heard about for the profession, you know, not as a technique per se, but it becomes an additive to becoming more masterful in coaching. I think it's fabulous.
And I say, you know, Patricia, and you've shared this from where you are professionally, I would say for anyone, it's impossible to not work cross-culturally.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because you're always going to have, you know, different ages, different genders, you know, if not other differences.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did my program where I'm trying to blend these two, the diversity and the global perspective, for my Toastmasters group. And it's hosted at an organization that has these two different IT departments who really see each other as, you know, like fish and ducks, you know, just totally different, even within IT.
Yeah, I told a story that I think is relevant to this conversation. I just did a keynote speech in Pittsburgh for the Pittsburgh Coaches Association. And then after talking about coaching and social transformation, I did a circle training with five nuns who are working with human trafficking projects.
Wow.
And I'm actually having a review call with them in half an hour on how it's gone with their committee. But the interesting part of that was I told this story. I said, you know, I got my start in coaching kind of before it was called coaching, and I started doing mediation.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember doing a group mediation with a manufacturing company in Chicago. And this was, gosh, this was probably 1994 or something like that. And it was a two-day training, and we had people from the Teamsters Union and some other union and management, and we were there to kind of mediate, not the contract, somebody else had already done that legally, but to communicate differently, ways of communication, kind of create that. And it was a hellish first day, and people left a lot of injury, but agreed to come back the next day and see what would unfold. And when we got there, there was a gingerbread man on everybody's seat.
That's great.
And finally, it was admitted that one of these big burly truck drivers with a Teamster said, well, I went home and told my wife, you know, about yesterday and coming back today, and she said to send these because she felt right about now everybody would feel like biting the head off of the gym.
And that's great.
It brought lightness to it. Number one, the fact that the Teamsters guy would say that. And it cracked everybody up, so that became a metaphor for, we might feel that way, but now let's get down to talking about what can be the same. What do we all want to get out of this by the end of today? And, you know, today we call that coaching, right? It's coaching session. So I love working with groups and circles like that when you work cross-culturally, work with a team, because teams are going to have, even if they're all mostly white, they're still going to have cultural differences.
Right.
Yep.
So I
and generational cultural differences is a huge topic right now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Say more about that. How do you see that evolving or erupting in the coaching world?
Well, as I do primarily leadership and executive coaching, there's a big concern right now from HR because the generation after the boomers is a smaller generation. So will there be enough leaders to fill the spots of, you know, as boomers retire is one concern. And the other is, you know, the people in their 20s who are coming into the workplace, you know, when the boomers did that, they just accepted basically these slave labor type of positions at these big law and accounting firms that, you know, I'm going to work like a dog so I can hopefully be a partner someday. And people aren't doing that anymore. They won't tolerate those conditions, or they'll stay for a year, you know, get the experience under their belt, and then go to a smaller firm, start their own firm. They're just not going for that imbalance of work life and the imbalance in terms of power and rank in organizations. They're just not willing to put up with it.
This is Patricia. This is the first time that we've had the four generations under the one roof in the workforce, and it's amazing to see this play out in healthcare with the older physicians and the younger residents.
Oh, and what else would you like to share about that, Patricia? I know you got to be careful.
Right. Well, we have the older nurses and the younger nurses, the older physicians and the younger residents. And as you already mentioned, these young people are saying, we're going to have a life. You didn't, but we are.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it doesn't make one right and the other one wrong, but they are absolutely unwilling to sacrifice their personal lives and their family lives for their profession.
Yes.
Yeah. Another place where that's shown out is the admissions to medical schools right now are 55% women.
That's right.
And they're not planning to work 50, 60-hour work week.
That's right.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Or 70 or 80 or whatever. Some of the cultural differences is when the next generation or the next ideation of that culture kind of just says no, or change happens, or perception changes. I know my 34-year-old daughter, I guess, is a millennial. I don't know the age group for millennial or X generation or whatever, a Y generation. But she's kind of the generation that they'll work doing things for a while, not behind a cubicle, and they'll save enough money, and then they'll go to New Zealand for 3 months.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And my daughters both did the quarter-life crisis. They both had marketing degrees. One went back and got her master's in divinity and is an associate pastor at a church. And the other one got a teaching degree, is working on her master's in library science, and is in Korea with an international school.
Wow.
So,
yeah. Well, I think the bottom line is, as we begin to wrap up this call, and I know there's other people listening besides Patricia and Marilyn and I here,
hello?
But
yes.
Hi. Somebody have a comment?
I just kind of wanted to speak to the generational differences. I'm Lauren from Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Oh, hi.
And
hi, Lauren.
I guess you would kind of call me a millennial.
I'm
in my mid-20s, I guess, having a quarter-life crisis, as my mom would put it. And sometimes I've noticed, even with speaking with some of my older clients, there is this generational difference where I'm like, you know what? You've spoken about this dream. You're doing this one job. That's great. But go on and just do the other thing, you know, because life is limited. You know, you don't have forever to live. Just go and do it.
Right.
And a lot of times I'll get this almost as a reservation of, why would I stop doing this to go, you know, for example, I actually have one client that wants to actually go teach in Korean. She's currently in nursing. I'm like, well, just go apply and, you know, follow your passion. Because, you know, a lot of people within my generation, it really is kind of about following our passions, doing what we love. You know, my parents were very surprised. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to school for life coaching now. They're looking at me. They're like, what? You know, so... You know, sometimes I just feel like, as far as just generational differences, I really think we could learn a lot from each other.
Oh,
you know, as
absolutely.
Far as,
I love it.
My generation, maybe if you stick it out just a little bit longer and other generations learning, hey, maybe I really should kind of break away, follow my passion, and maybe I really will be living a more authentic and happier life,
right.
Which is what I really try to, you know, I guess get across to all of my clients.
Beautiful, Lauren. And are you also, I mean, you've been on several of my calls. Hi, good to hear you again. Are you also connected with the military there in Kentucky?
My husband's in the military.
Your husband's military. So there's a culture. That's a unique.
That's
culture.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It is.
Absolutely.
I've had some military clients, and it is phenomenal. I actually primarily focus with on military spouses because we go through so many transitions, and I'm like, you know, we've got to stay upbeat and positive. I'm like, okay. Like, for example, I think next month, well, actually, I don't know if I'm going to Korea or not. I'm not sure where we're going to go with it next year, but
God. It's
so important to stay upbeat and positive and just to stay true to your authentic self. So I always, a lot of times, I just tell the people that I'm coaching, you know, stay true to yourself, stay true to your passions, and if you've got a passion, follow it, because, you know, you're only going to be here for a couple more months. You might as well kind
that.
Of do what you need to do, but really that's all I have to say on that subject.
I love that.
Well, and that's a culture that's changing a lot, too. You know, they've repealed the don't ask, don't tell. They, you know, all this backlash about women and sexual assault and whether that should stay in military trial or,
women,
you know, be in a civilian.
Duty.
Yep. So big changes.
Yeah. Did you take our training through the MyCAA program?
Yes, actually
yeah,
I did.
Yeah, that's what I thought I remembered. Yeah, for spouses of Iraqi and Afghanistan. So you may not know that, Marilyn. We're one of the few coaching schools approved by the Department of Defense.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, we got special approval for, I think we trained some like 13 spouses of military veterans or enlisted people that
yep,
took our training.
Yeah, actually my husband will join your school in a couple months.
Oh, great. Oh,
wonderful.
Super. Well, thank you for that, because that's definitely, I mean, you've got the age culture, the millennial thing, the military awareness, the... you know, living in Kentucky, I don't know where you come from, but military people oftentimes, with all their movement around, experience culture around the world, and yet the base is always very American.
It is.
Yeah. Right. Culture within a culture. So I think if nobody has anything else, I'll give Marilyn and Patricia and you, Lauren, a chance to see if there's anything else you want to say, what you want to leave with, or what you're leaving with today from this. But I just love this discussion. I'm glad we recorded it. I think this is an exciting addition to what Coaching's Evolution is becoming. You know, when I think back to its early days of, well, we're calling this coaching. It's using a lot of techniques from other things like adult learning and psychology and counseling, et cetera. But it's evolved so much. And this is the next big thing, I think. So I appreciate you being on the call, Marilyn, and wonder if you have any final words to say, and then we'll ask our listeners, too.
Well, I just invite everyone to, you know, up their awareness if you're not already there. You know, as you're working with clients, as you're contracting with them, to be aware of your own culture and the effect that may have on the coaching conversations and relationship, and then check with your client on that. And then again, I would encourage you to, if you haven't already, to listen to those two free ICF webinars. They're on the ICF page under events and then advance, and then you'll find the webinars.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think they're going to post more things. I mean, the event in D.C. actually was also streamed, so we had people who were watching it on the web participate in the conference.
Yeah, and 77 participated that way, virtually, live streaming. And then it's still available. Say, if you've got a local ICF chapter, you could still purchase the whole thing, the virtual package, afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For a nominal cost. Yeah.
Patricia, Lauren, or anybody else, anything you want to say?
Yeah, we've got Rodney and Renee and Greg. Lauren?
As Rodney in Austin, I would like to say that for Pat and for Marilyn, I appreciate your passion and your courage in this area. This is a difficult area.
Yes, it is.
In America in particular. Mm-hmm. Many people are uncomfortable speaking about differences, and certainly racial differences. And truth be told, we still have a tremendous racial divide in America.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I am a man of color, 65 years old,
mm-hmm.
born and raised in the Deep South.
Yeah.
Product of segregation, a contemporary of Jim Crow at that time.
Right.
So I've lived through and seen many, many things, but I'm a free
mm-hmm.
man. A free man.
Yeah.
Jim Crow.
Powerful.
In my mind. But I appreciate
mm-hmm.
your courage and your passion and your willingness to address this. You know, I've been wanting to ask, but we don't have time. Why is this even important to you? And I mean that in a
mm-hmm.
positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't have to be.
Right.
I think you understand what I'm saying. You know.
There's a long story of why it's important to be. We got to have that
mm-hmm.
sometime. But,
that would be, you know, and that's an important thing to share. It's our journeys and how we got here. And I think, for me, it started as a child around 9 years old. And finding out, in the case of the international, that the Russians weren't really that scary because of encounters that I had with them face to face. And then, you know, the experience of the racial divide still present in Kansas City at that time, and realizing people weren't being treated with equal respect. And that was just, you know, like shocking and disappointing. And unfair, you know, and so just continuing to look at how things can be, I don't say more equitable, but more just.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think justice goes beyond the equitable.
Right. Yeah. You know, Rodney, I think you spurred me to think about a future forum where we might try to create a dialogue about that with participants. I think that would be valuable, and just I can give you a 45-second snippet of why it's important to me, and I think this is part of my culture. So here I was, born and raised in Wichita, Kansas, right? And my high school was 30%, give or take, black at the time. And when Martin Luther King was assassinated, my friends who were black protected me during the riots. And that made an impact on me. And then my father was an executive with the Coleman Company. We had people from different countries live with us when they came over to study management techniques of the Coleman Company, you know, heating, air conditioning, all that camping equipment. And then I was in Rotary for 21 years, and I went to various cultures and also had 7 exchange students live with us from different cultures. So I just love learning what I don't know about other people.
Mm-hmm.
And also awareness that I have a white privilege that I can't get rid of. I have to use it, not abuse it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's a tough question. I appreciate you saying that. I think that's
for
me on to another.
Thank you for answering, both of you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rodney. And Lisa Garrett had created that class on coaching and social justice. Is she still offering that?
Yeah, we do that about once a year, and I think I'm going to talk to her about kind of adding this whole conversation about cultural competency as part of it. So that would be rich.
Yeah.
Anybody else on the call that wanted to say anything and, you know, what you got out of it or what you want to leave us with?
No, I just wanted to say thank you very much for offering this class. I really, really enjoyed it and found it very helpful.
Thank you, Patricia.
Thanks for your input, Patricia.
You're welcome. Thank you. And anybody who hasn't taken the metaphor class, go for it.
Yeah, I'll teach it again in a few months. I love doing that and get some new ideas, so thank you.
And it's part of the direct communication class, too, the cultural competence and metaphors that I teach.
Yes,
Marilyn.
Yes. Right. Yeah, that's a competency that people need to have at a higher level. Is use of metaphors is direct communication. And I would just leave you all, if anybody on this call or anybody listening to this works with international clients or does training internationally, I found a great reference from Barry Zukol, who was at the conference. Google the words country navigator. If you're going to work or coach people who move from culture to culture, that company that has Country Navigator as a tool, and you can take a sample of it for free, it is so brilliant. If you're going to have somebody from Turkey go work in China, you can Google those two countries on Country Navigator and find out what do you need to know about going from Turkey to China or from U.S. to Sweden or from, I mean, it's unbelievable. Research-backed, evidence-based, this whole map. So for any of your clients that work internationally, they may want to buy the licensing to use that tool because it's super, super valuable. I was impressed when I looked at it.
Thank you.
So we thank you all very much for being here, and keep the conversation going. You know, always let us know of any stories that we want to put in the ILCT newsletter, or if you have questions of things that we want us to have as a forum, let me know. I just love having these rich discussions. And Marilyn, thank you for being my guest today. Thank you for creating the impetus to get that advance that happened. Notice we didn't call it a retreat. It was an advance. So we're advancing the cultural competency conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. It's great continuing on this journey with you all and the students.
Thank you.
Thank
all
you
right.
Great. Thank
Happy
you
Thanksgiving,
much.
Everybody.
Good luck.
Thanks.
You
thank too.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello?